More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. As 2014 winds to a close, we typically might look back at the year that was and then look ahead at what the year to come might hold.
Well, the food world is no different. We've chronicled a lot of what's taken place this year frequently on the show, but Lake Effect food contributor Kyle Cherik joins us now to look ahead at two particular dining trends that he believes will be front and center in 2015. Kyle, welcome back.
It's delightful to be here, as always.
Great to see you. Happy Christmas, New Year, and all of that stuff.
Holidays.
Yeah, so looking forward to 2015, mm-hmm. lots of interesting trends and things that you're seeing, starting with
last year when I sat in this chair and we talked about 2013 and trends that I wish would go away.
Did they, by the way?
Many have abated.
That's good.
Yeah, the gastropub influx and cupcakes and pork-centricness. This year, I'm in a much better mood.
Oh, good.
I feel that Milwaukee's culinary scene, its restaurants, is moving into a Pax Romana, if you will, because we just keep growing all these great restaurants. And to be totally pragmatic about it, I think we're going to keep going on this bubble for another 6 to 8 years, and then it's going to crash like all bubbles, and we're going to lose 20-25%, and there'll be a flight towards quality. And some folks that will stay in business not because they're as exemplary as others, but because they were better funded. And those that will close just because they didn't have, you know, the money underneath or the great management or what have you. Or they bought their space or leased their space at the height of the market. I mean, we look at the explosion of neighborhoods like Bayview and Walker's Point and how they're becoming restaurant-centric. And it's really quite practical. It's just where they can afford to open restaurants.
And as those rents go up because people say, hey, wait a minute, this is popular.
Correct.
Then they have to find new spaces.
Yeah. I mean, in the last year, just this Good Kind, Lazy Susan, Morel, Cafe Bavaria, Onesto, Salto, Zarletti up in Mequon, Bavette, Story Hill, BKC, Bottle Kitchen Cup, Nuri, Engine No. 3, Smith did a rebrand and got back on Carol's Top 30 list, amazingly talented chef, Milwaukee that, they've got on a great new chef, and this is not an inclusive, but these really terrific restaurants keep opening up.
And I think for me, even more importantly, they're staying in business.
Right, it's not just
that they're opening up, that they're actually staying in business and people are going and they're getting buzz.
Well, they're quirky concepts. I mean, Vanguard opens up and it's basically sausages and booze, right? Yeah, but people are going. People are loving it. You can open up just a donut place in downtown, as holy moly proved, and this works. This is a doable thing. I think we're going to keep going in this restaurant scene, and what's interesting to me is that fine dining is now being redefined in the country with a casual aspect of fine dining, and it's being redefined exactly in sync in Milwaukee. If you had pitched Ardent to investors and said, we're going to take a garden apartment that was a flower shop and then a juice bar, and we're going to do a prefix menu north of 160 that's chef's tasting, no one would give you money. And the truth was, no one did give Justin Kyle money. But he's proven that you can do it. And we've got more places like that where the fine dining aspect of the cuisine is still there, but it's more of a casual environment. And the country is doing that. I mean, everybody from Estella in New York to Catbird Seat in Nashville, down certainly in the Southeast, and then really the West Coast has always had a little bit of that. But this is a trend that's going to change how we eat in America. And it's interesting. It reminds me a little bit of a time in Paris. Most food historians agree that the restaurant really landed as a thing in 1782 in Paris in the Palace Royal. But the 1820s to about the 1920s were really the heyday of that cafe society. Right there was a codified style. But that was eroded throughout Parisian culture because so many people started cooking really well and doing aspects of that fine dining, in that sense, cafe society, but watering it down a little bit, but still with the great cuisine. And, you know, it's a little bit like what the French went through a couple of years ago, well, now maybe 6-8 years ago with Le Fooding, which was a pushback to the Michelin system where they said, hey, it's great to have white tablecloths and certain space between plates and chairs and all the candles, but there's great cuisine in the rest of Paris and France, and we're going to talk about that. That's happening here in America, but it's now attainable for chefs, and it's happening here in Milwaukee. It's great. I was looking at the average age of a chef that we know on a national level. So when did they get their own restaurant, right? Thomas Keller opens French Laundry when he's 39. Daniel Boulud opens up Danielle when he's 38. Paul Kahan takes the helm of Blackbird in Chicago when he's 37. Charlie Trotter being the anomaly, he was 28 years old when he opened up Trotter's. But our chefs here in Milwaukee and throughout the country are now in their late 20s or early 30s as a norm when they're opening up their own restaurants and asserting their own voice.
In a way, we're kind of ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I think there's an update within American cuisine and probably worldwide. But, you know, Jacques Pepin has always asserted you need 7-8 years to find your voice. You cook for somebody for a year and a half, you move on, you cook from somebody, you learn, you push back, and then you're ready to assert who you are, your personal dishes, right? I love that line in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies where the villain from the East Indian Trading Company says that the blank spots on the map are being filled in. And if you're a chef, you can now fill in those spots. You can go stage pretty much anywhere in the world if you can scrape up the money. I mean, I love Thomas Houck from Circa 1880's story. He basically was illegally traveling and cooking in France after his visa ran out because he wanted to expose himself. But he was 31 when he opened up Circa 1880. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a fine dining restaurant, right? But in a more casual aspect, in Walker's Point, where a lot of people hadn't gone for fine dining when he opened it up, hardly at all. I mean, what was the last great fine dining restaurant that we had there? We had Chip and Pies, and then we had Crazy Water, of course, and that was really it. Yeah.
Right.
Other casual locations, Braise opened up around, but that's softer.
We're looking at fine dining continuing here in Milwaukee, but we're looking at this trend of where it's a more relaxed atmosphere to go experience it, which kind of fits with
who we are.
Yeah.
I think it works in concert with the democratization of cuisine that America has been going through with all of the media, and I'm part of it, and I think this is a good thing. It's interesting. I read a study the other day about how the average American, so I think they were placed at 38 years old and professional, is spending 22% of their budget on food, which is crazy, right? I mean, that's huge.
Going out and shopping.
That's going out and, yeah, groceries. But it's become a way of us to culturally relate to each other. Whereas dining before used to be, certainly it was about the food, but it was also about the business. And there were stratas. There was almost a caste system, right, of where we ate. Now that has just been blown to bits. And you can get an exquisite, exquisite meal at a place that looks a little rough and tumble on the outside or risks with its appearance or what have you.
And you don't have to wear your best suit.
You don't have to wear a skirt or a sport coat or anything like that. You can show up as you are. And that's how the restaurateurs, and that's what the chefs want, it seems to be. So it's a curious trend within the nation and what it says about our psychology about food. I'm anxiously excited about how Milwaukee will continue to embrace it. Like I said, I think we'll keep growing. I know there'll be a bubble at some point because there always is with a bubble. But the good news about our city, and I said this last year and I've said it before, is that we are now a destination for chefs to come to learn. I was at a ramen place, I don't know, a month, month and a half ago, and there was a guy that had come back from Portland, right? We all talk about Portland as this mecca of foodieism and great cooking, to learn to move around and cook in different kitchens here in Milwaukee.
Before he went back.
And I keep running into people like that and restaurateurs that are enthusiastic and so on and so forth. And part of it, I think, is that the economy's back and banks are willing to lend a little bit more, at least the SBA ones. But there's also a desire for these diners to go out and explore. And we all want to check in at least once.
Right.
Yeah.
So what else? Besides, this is a really big trend and interesting. What else do you think is going to happen in 2015?
Well, the other curious thing that I'm watching from 30,000 feet is this prepay aspect that's happening within fine dining, as I was talking about. So Nick Kokonis, he is Grant Eckert's partner, one of the more famous chefs in the country, probably in the world, Grant Eckert of Alinea and then Next. Kokonis has developed, a lot of people are familiar with Open Table where you can reserve a spot. He's developed a software package called Tock where you literally prepay for the Prixfee dinner. You prepay for your reservation, not unlike you would a sports event or entertainment or what have you, but many upper echelon restaurants have adopted it. And now it's watering itself down to the little brasseries and so on and so forth across the country, more on the coast, more in the Brooklyns and the San Franciscos. But the fact that early adapters are acclimatizing to that, it's two things. It's curious to me in that it's confidence in the restaurant and the chef's cooking. So, yes, I want to spend $35, $95, $160, $400 on the chef's menu. And two, I feel comfortable doing this just as I do buying an airplane ticket or a basketball or a symphony ticket. This is an experience for the evening. This is what I avail myself to. And it hasn't quite come to Milwaukee, but I find it just fascinating as a foodie culturally that now we see dining out, at least for the Percés and the Trois Mecs in L.A., at that level.
It's also interesting to me because what you're buying in that way is you're not picking the food. It's the chef's menu.
Mm-hmm.
So like going to the theater, you don't necessarily know what you're going to get when you walk in the door.
Right.
You
right.
might have heard of the playwright, but that might be all you know. So you've heard of the chef.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. you may or may not like what comes out.
You know it's La Traviata or Neil Simon's Odd Couple, but you don't know what this version is going to be. You
right.
don't know if you'll agree, because we're going to the Nutcracker, if you'll agree with this version of the Nutcracker, but you have confidence, essentially. You're putting your money down in advance on the theater company, on the team, on the experience. As a cultural paradigm, I find that fascinating. And the efficiency at which it's been adopted down into what I would call lower level, B, the more casual places. Now, of course, from the restaurants, it's great because they can control cash flow. And if you don't show, well, that would be your problem, wouldn't it? Whereas since the origination of the word in 1782, if you didn't show, that would be the restaurant's problem if you were at a reservation.
Right. It definitely flips the burden.
Right. But again, yeah. it's that paradigm shift where if you and I were going to the symphony and we bought tickets together and for whatever reason we couldn't make it, the symphony would never say, well, gosh, that's too bad. We will just take that hit for the night. No,
No, it's up to you right. to find somebody to take your ticket.
Right, which is how I first ended up eating it next. I guess there was their second menu. Somebody couldn't take a ticket. And I said, yes, I'd be happy to buy that seat literally for that dinner that night.
To try it.
To try it,
yeah.
to go.
Yeah. Do you see this as a trend that really is going to take off here?
I think early adapters and certain restaurants that could – I mean, every restaurant could use the cash flow – but the restaurants that have distinguished themselves as that type of experience or event, I think will probably be dabbling in it within 12 months to 18 months. And it will bolster, on the other side, the places where you can walk up, you know, belly up to the bar, as it were, come as you are still, whenever you want. And so both sides will win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the smart ones will always leave. And it's the same thing now with most of my friends that have the casual, finer dining, that category I was talking about before. They always leave 6 or 8 seats open. If they're a 30-seat restaurant, they leave 5 open because they know people are going to come in. And they don't want to turn them away. And the whole point is not to have that snobbery, but also to control cash flow, right?
Right. You have to balance it.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
As a business,
right.
you have to balance it.
I mean, the theaters
yeah.
show 2 shows a night on purpose.
Yeah.
Because they can get more people in and sell more popcorn.
Right.
So I think it's going to be a great year. I think that there are some – I know there are some things in the horizon that I can't quite speak to, share on the radio. The good news is that there's explosion on the large side, let's say Bartolotta's with Downtown Kitchen and the U.S. Bank Building and, you know, nearly disheveled buildings over in Bayview where Lazy Susan is. Both of them are popping. And that's the good news. They're finding homes and they're finding diners.
And you can't ask for more than that.
You cannot.
Well, Kyle, I hope you have a great New Year's, Christmas and New Year's celebration, and we will look forward to seeing what happens in 2015.
I will raise a glass to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's lovely.
On New Year's.
And I to you as well, and we will be talking in the new year about all kinds of other stuff as it comes along.
Right on. Always a pleasure to be here.
Kyle Cherik is host of the public television show Wisconsin Foodie and a regular Lake Effect contributor. Keep listening. Coming up next on the program, the story of a Wisconsin woman and her new book of recipes. It's a tribute to her Austrian grandmother. You are listening to Lake Effect on WUWM.